And welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel, for those of you who weren't here when I announced us the first time, to my right, Justice Lee Gabriel. To my left, Justice Bonnie Sutterth. And I'm Leanne Dofino. Justice Sutterth has been appointed by the governor to this court, and we are looking forward to working with her. We know she will be a positive contribution to the functioning of this court. I understand both sides are ready. Then if you'll call the case, we'll get started.
The court will now call Ace Cash Express Incorporated versus the City of Eden, Texas. May it please the court, Mr. Clayton E. Bailey will argue for the appellant. Mr. Jerry E. Drake will argue for the
Thank you. All right. You ready?
I am, Your Honor. Well, good afternoon, and may it please the court. The adverse effects of affirming the trial court's order granting the City of Denton's plea to the jurisdiction in this case will be substantial and far-reaching. It will not only result in a conflict with longstanding Texas Supreme Court precedent as it relates to equity jurisdiction, but it will also result in basically approving the city's conduct and unilaterally preventing ACE from having its day in court to challenge a criminal ordinance that ACE has admitted to violating. It will also close the doors to ACE in a situation where its vested property rights have been irreparably harmed based on an alleged unconstitutional ordinance. Now, we have given the court two different grounds in which to reverse and remand this case. One is equity jurisdiction under the City of Austin case from the Texas Supreme Court, and the other is equity jurisdiction under the Morales case from the Texas Supreme Court. The court can decide either way to go and give us the relief that we're asking for, so we need to only win on one of those grounds.
Let me ask you this. How is this case different from the Dallas case? And you, how do you distinguish this from the Dallas Courts of the decision in the by the Dallas Courts of Court of Appeals?
Yes. The arguments and the evidence in this case are completely different. And let me begin with City of Austin. In that case, the court said that City of Austin did not apply because there was no finding of a violation nor any situation where the city failed to prosecute. The evidence in this case establishes just the opposite. We've got letters to the city attorney's office saying we violated the statute on these occasions. We've admitted in court we violated.
But you haven't done it in a way that anybody could be prosecuted for it.
I disagree, Your Honor. We've confessed that we've done wrong. All the city's got to do now is send an inspector to go out and look at our books, which it has the right under this ordinance. We've done everything that is necessary. They're playing games, Your Honor. We have said we're liable. We've violated it. We've even given the time frame in which we committed the violations in the letters. Those are judicial admissions. In that case, over in Dallas, they didn't have the facts like we have here. Furthermore, they didn't make the interim argument that we did in this case. For example, this ordinance, after it was amended, after we did all of our briefing to the trial court, they amended it to take out customers, okay? But they still left the fact that this ordinance can result in a criminal prosecution of one of ACE's employees. It acts in terrarium. That's what City of Austin says. No reasonable person wants to go out and violate a criminal ordinance and basically be prosecuted. We've got that situation here. ACE has basically got its hands tied. We only can act through our employees. And so what else can we do? The statute or the ordinance acts in terrarium. The other reason, Justice Gabriel, that that opinion is different deals with the vested property rights argument that was made over in Dallas. Essentially, the only thing that they argued over there was the fact that the companies didn't have a right to make a living. Okay, that's what it did. That's the supposed denial of a vested property right. We have a totally different situation, different arguments, different evidence. our vested property rights are the agreements that we had with our customers that were in place at the time the first ordinance went into effect. As a result of that ordinance, in order to comply, we had to relinquish those agreements and rewrite them. That resulted in our customers defaulting under those agreements more than two times than before in pre-ordinance situations. Furthermore, that caused us to have a situation where our business was severely curtailed. The evidence indicates that our net revenue after the ordinance went into effect went down by 78%. Our loan fees went down 63%. As the evidence in the trial court indicated, there's a significant possibility that we're going to have to close one or both stores up there. Now, I'll tell you, both of them are open right now, but we're waiting for this court to act. They're holding on by the skin of their teeth, and if this court does not give us the relief we're asking for, we're going to have to make a hard decision. You cannot operate a business that way, losing that kind of money. Those facts, Your Honor, were not over in the Dallas case. So that Dallas case, actually, let me tell you this. I think it supports our case here, and I'll tell you the reason why. It cites some language from City of Austin that I think is dead on. It cites a provision that says, or a quote from City of Austin says, if a penalty was denounced against no one but the market man who should sell, it would seem that his remedy would be to proceed with his business and defeat any prosecution that should be brought against him for the infraction of the void ordinance. The ordinance here doesn't just hit the market man. It hits the market man's employee, and that's the problem. It would be one thing if I had my own tailor shop or my own butcher shop, and you know what? I could go ahead and violate the ordinance, and then I could go deal with it, challenge it in the criminal court. Here, that's not what we have with ACE. It's like a bank. It operates through employees. It's not just the market man. It's the market man's employees. Again, we actually think that Dallas court opinion supports this court, saying that the trial court had equity jurisdiction under City of Austin. So I appreciate that question, because I think that is the main argument of the cities. They're hanging their hat on that argument, because as we pointed out in our reply brief, they did not respond to hardly anything that we wrote in our opening brief. They didn't touch the constitutionality issues. They didn't address our irreparable injury to our vested property rights, and they really didn't go into the City of Austin arguments that we made. In fact, they only cited that opinion twice in their 31-page brief. One thing I would like to make clear under equity jurisdiction under City of Austin is it really states two things. I think the first one's very important. Equity arises and gives rise to equity jurisdiction where there is no plain, adequate, or complete relief. And that's the problem we have here. We cannot get into court to challenge that ordinance because they won't prosecute us. We've done everything we can do that needs to be done for them to investigate us and prosecute us. We've confessed. There are judicial admissions. We said so to the trial court. We're hamstrung. And I think that's the reason why this court, it needs to step into this case. The ramifications of allowing this to occur in this situation, it may be ACE today, but you know what? It may be a car wash tomorrow. It may be a baker shop. It could be a nail salon. You name the industry that a majority of council members may at some time have a distaste for. This case, if the court basically affirms, it sets up a roadmap for other cities to do similar things. And it may be not just against cabs, credit access businesses like ourselves, but it could be against other businesses, pawn shops, you name it. Equity jurisdiction should arise in this case. The other thing I wanted to point out was this. The court made findings of facts and conclusions of law, and as we pointed out, most of those are immaterial or irrelevant. The court talked about how the amendment to the ordinance that occurred just before the hearing, after we had filed our briefing in the trial court and raised all these arguments, that somehow cured things. The trial court missed the point. The trial court was focused on how by the amendment to the ordinance, removing the fact that it wouldn't apply to customers, well, it forgot the fact that that ordinance applies to any other persons, our employees. The interim effect still applies. And if you go back to that City of Austin case, it was concerned with the sweeping language of that ordinance because it not only applied to the cemeteries and to customers, but it left another person too in there, grave diggers, the employee who went out there and dug the grave.
That opinion ever make reference to an employee of the cemetery?
The grave diggers, Your Honor. The grave diggers. That's who it talks about in that opinion. I'll be more than happy to cite the language to you.
I've got it right here. That's fine. Go ahead. Yeah.
Under these conditions, who would venture to bury or be concerned in burying a dead body in a Pelley's ground, or who would purchase a lot in its cemetery?
That your interpretation of who would bury is you say that's a grave digger. They say it's a family, a customer.
Who would venture to bury? I disagree with you, Your Honor.
Okay, I'm not saying yeah. I have an opinion on it one way or the other. Yeah. I'm just saying that is your argument as to what that means.
And again, I mean, if you look at the opinion itself on pages 529 to 530, it talks about how it's sweeping language. And I'll be more than happy when in my reply I'll look at that even closer to point out. But it applies to more than just the market man in that situation. If I could turn over, I think we've hit City of Austin. If we can go to Morales, the vested property right in this case, again, there are contracts, there are agreements, there are loans that were in effect at the time the ordinance went into effect. We had to relinquish those, we had to redo those, and again, it resulted in higher default rates and all the other problems that arose that harmed our business, or irreparably harmed our business. The other point I wanted to point out to the court is this, the unconstitutionality issue. All we had to do were plead facts to establish that this ordinance was unconstitutional. We did that. There's no argument that we did that. The court has made no finding of fact that it was constitutional or unconstitutional. The city had, once we pled those facts under Miranda, it had a burden to come forward with summary judgment type evidence. It didn't do so. In fact, as we sit here today, I'm anxious to see what the response is of the city, because it's never taken on the fact as to whether or not its ordinance is constitutional or not. It's never addressed that, and it won't. And I think it's because they're afraid that it is not constitutional. They're not confident in it, and they're trying to do everything they can to prevent a challenge to it, and that's the reason why they will not prosecute us based on our admissions of liability. Lastly, I would just say this, because there's equity jurisdiction under either Morales or under City of Austin, we have a right to bring our Declaratory Judgment Act. The immunity is then waived and we can proceed forward. So I know that the city, in its opening portion of its response brief, spent a good portion of its briefing talking about the fact that immunity is not waived for a naked declaration of rights, that type of thing. That's not what we're seeking here. There is equity jurisdiction in this case, and we have a right to proceed forward with our declaratory judgment action. If there are any questions I can answer, if not, I'll sit. Thank you.
Thank you. Jerry?
Support. My name is Jerry Drake, representing the city of Denton, Texas. And I would like to begin with a confession, if I may. I heard Mr. Bailey say that Dallas is different. Well, I want to tell this court, we shamelessly plagiarized Dallas's ordinance. We took it. We didn't write it ourselves, they wrote it. We took their ordinance and we passed it as it was. If there's any differences to our ordinance and Dallas's ordinance, it's that we changed it later on to specifically provide that consumers may not be prosecuted under our ordinance in response to Ace arguing that this interim jurisdiction under the Austin Cemetery case. Specifically passed that just to make it abundantly clear, this ordinance was always about protection of consumers, always. It's never intended to prosecute consumers. And the Dallas Court of Appeals, despite not having our amendment in there, they found that there is nothing in the Dallas ordinance that would allow for prosecution of consumers. It's not designed to do that. It's a specious argument. And so I want to begin very clearly by stating that the Dallas case is dead on here. It is solidly on grounds as far as the resolution of this appeal is concerned. Another thing that I want to say right up front is that we're not trying to run payday lenders out of business the way that Mr. Bailey said in his brief. Our ordinance allows for payday lending, but it puts some limitations on it that are consistent with our home rule authority and not preempted by state law. The state law provides for licensure of payday operators. We provide for registration and notification. We provide for limitations on the number of times that a loan could be refinanced to ensure that there's adequate capital and that consumers are not trapped into a cycle of debt. And so there is plenty of room for people to make a living in Denton, Texas, engaging in payday lending, provided that they do so responsibly. That's what our ordinance is all about. If I could, I'd like to skip next to the Morales argument. And if we turn to the Morales case, what it says is that there's a general rule that a court in equity has no jurisdiction to enjoin a penal statute unless the statute is unconstitutional and that irreparable harm would result to a vested property right. I actually wrote down the language straight from the Morales case, and it says that that's only when evidence that the statute is unconstitutionally applied. I will gladly tell this court that we did not submit any evidence that our ordinance was unconstitutionally applied. And we do not agree that there was any irreparable injury to any vested property rights because we don't think there were any vested.
Do you not agree that accounts receivable are property rights?
I don't believe that they are vested property rights. They're an expectation, and I think that they still have their entitlement to enforce the agreement that they have. I think what ACE's argument is that they can't renegotiate the contract because of limitations that are provided in our ordinance. But the contract that they have is a contract that they can enforce. As far as it being a challenge on our pleadings, ACE facially sought to enjoin a penal ordinance, and they had an opportunity to amend. In fact, they were the ones who set the case for trial. They were pushing for the case for a premature trial on it. We objected to the trial setting, as a matter of fact. They were the ones who sought it. So they had adequate opportunity under the Miranda case to amend their pleadings. We saw this as something that was subject to a plea to the jurisdiction on the pleadings themselves without any summary judgment evidence coming into effect. The Declaratory Judgment Action Act does not confer jurisdiction. It's merely a procedural device. And so when ACE is saying that the city is subject to attorney fees under the Declaratory Judgment Act, no, it's not. In asking for a counterclaim, no, it did not subject itself to liability for attorney fees under there, where we sought no affirmative relief. The plaintiff did waive on the record any claim about preemption, and that's clear from the transcript in the court. There is no jurisdiction on a suit for damages. It's clear from the discovery answers and from the plea for general relief that plaintiff was seeking general damages, that they were seeking monetary damages as a result of that. That's prohibited under the Heinrich case. And
what
that's
cited in their pleadings, because I looked, I didn't see any requests for money.
In their prayer, Your Honor, they sought general relief, and that combined with their disclosure answers, where they said they actually quantified the damages that they were claiming as a result. Under the Morales case, it's very much like the Younger abstention doctrine, in that you leave it to the criminal court to decide the issues of constitutionality in the context of a criminal prosecution. It's the appropriate thing. Why? Well, you look to the issues that are specific to the criminal pleading. You look at and this came up during the trial court, interpretation of the Code of Criminal Procedure, Article 45, where you get into what are the requirements for bringing a criminal complaint. They seem to be arguing that because we said you haven't identified an actor, that means that we're going to prosecute that individual. That's not true. If you look at the Code of Criminal Procedure, if you look at Texas Penal Code 7.22, even where you prosecute a corporation, you're going to have to give notice of the manner and means in which the offense was committed. You're going to have to indicate who various actors are who participated in the criminal act. That's going to be a requirement associated with any prosecution. Well, if that's the case, if we're going to have to look to what these criminal standards are, shouldn't that be brought in the context of a criminal proceeding where you've got a court that's sitting as a criminal court that is well familiar with these issues, where you have attorneys that are representing both sides that are well familiar with these criminal issues and who understand that just because you designate somebody as an actor in a pleading, that doesn't mean that they are the ones who will be held accountable in the complaint. As far as the constitutional issues are concerned, yes, ACE challenged the constitutionality of Denton's ordinance, but that's part of the plea on the merits. Denton's whole reason for filing a plea to the jurisdiction was because on the basis of the pleadings alone, there was no reason to even get into the merits. Now, what Morales says is that, if you want to get past the general prohibition of asking a civil court in equity to rule upon a penal ordinance, you have to show that it's unconstitutional as applied, and that's not our burden. They keep saying that try to shoehorn it in through the Miranda case that the city carries the burden on that. Well, if you think about it for just a moment, that's really kind of nonsensical. We're supposed to show that our ordinance is constitutional in a plea to the jurisdiction so that we don't have to reach the merits of whether the ordinance is constitutional. It's nonsensical. It's a catch-22. And it makes absolutely no sense at all. And it's not the way that it's written in the Morales case. As far as the refusal to prosecute is concerned, the correspondent says otherwise. The ACE is referring to the letters to me from ACE's civil trial counsel. He's not referring to the letters that I wrote back to him, that I invited him.
Go talk to the police about this. Go, you know, fill out a complaint. I can't be involved because of the ethics rules that are involved here. Imagine I'm sitting here as the city's civil attorney, and I want to get past this issue, so I involve myself in bringing criminal charges in order to gain an advantage in a civil case. Well, that's, to me, by my reading, that's what the disciplinary rules forbid. I need to be removed from that. I need to be out of that. They need to, if they want to be prosecuted, if they want an opportunity to raise this, all they have to do is go down the street to the police department. I told them so. I told them we will prosecute that. But you need to bring forward the facts that will support the prosecution. We'll prosecute it, and you can raise your issues at that time. They never did it. I think they would rather cry crocodile tears over the wording of their letter to me than to actually go down the street and do what needs to be done. To my knowledge, the plaintiff never filed a police report, never called the police, and never swore to any criminal complaint. And exactly where is, I'm sorry.
Ace never filed a criminal complaint? Is that who you're talking about?
Yes, ma'am.
Against themselves?
Yes. If they really want to fight this case and they're complaining that they can't get their day in court.
Can't be the complainant and the defendant both.
They can certainly have an employee complain about them. It certainly wouldn't be the first time that an employee's turned state evidence on his employer. We have whistleblower laws now. We have protections for informants who turn state evidence on their employer. It happens all the time. And so there's certainly an adequate way for them to get into the criminal court. Are they any better, Justice Dauphineau, for asking the city civil attorney to bring the charges?
Somebody's got to bring the charges, not the defendant. The defendant doesn't file. Okay, you know, to prosecute a criminal case, you've got to have a complaint. Mm-hmm. And you've got to have an information.
Mm-hmm. Well, and actually, in a municipal court, you need only the complaint. But be that as it may, the complaint's brought in the name and the authority of the state of Texas, and so it's the state of Texas that's pursuing the charges. The information
right.
can still come from ACE. Well, picking up on that point where they're talking about the in terrorem effects of the ordinance, where exactly is this terror when ACE is walking around daring us to file criminal charges against them? That doesn't sound like in terrorem to me. That sounds like somebody who's not cowed here. And I think that Austin Cemetery is kind of a quaint old case that may not take into account the fact that people have whistleblower rights now, the fact that people can receive witness protection, protection as far as turning state evidence. There have been a lot of developments since the two centuries ago, and I don't really know that it has a whole lot of applicability in the realities of criminal prosecution today. It's certainly possible, and I raise this in the brief, that it's certainly possible for ACE to violate that without the involvement of any particular individuals. They can refuse to register with the city. They can do any number of different things, and those are all raised in our brief as well. I thought really interesting, if you look at the ACE reply brief on page 17, they claimed that the city admitted that it would prosecute the case. So it's interesting to hear them say that they will not. So anyway, I think that the Dallas case is, I'm sorry, I'm out of time. Thank you.
You have any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, just quickly. You know, there may be a little dust on the bottle as it relates to City of Austin, but the fact of the matter is that it's cited over and over and over in every case that the courts deal with equity jurisdiction. It was just cited in 2011 in the Starvin Marvin's bar case that they cite and rely on. That case is good law. And it just states that the essential principles that, again, if there's no plain, adequate, or complete relief, equity arises and it gives people an opportunity to come into court and have equity jurisdiction and challenge ordinances. And Justice Dofano, I mean, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but that's how you looked is how ACE feels. We have confessed that we've done wrong in several letters, two letters that we put into evidence. We've offered to do an agreed prosecution back in September of 2014. We, in court, judicially admitted violations and offered to have an agreed prosecution.
What level misdemeanor is this?
Excuse me?
What level misdemeanor is this?
It doesn't say, but it would be a misdemeanor, and then it would be a $500 fine per violation, and that would be per day that we would have these loans out there that would violate. They could hold back, you know, kind of sit behind the log and then hit us with a monstrosity of a fine. So that's another thing we worry about, too, Your Honor. But we've admitted that we've done wrong, and we want to challenge this. That's all we're asking for. Give us an opportunity. Let us go to the courthouse, which courts are there for, which is to allow people to seek redress. That's all we're asking for. The point I wanted to make out, too, is the fact that the Dallas Court of Appeals opinion never said that nothing in that ordinance would not allow a prosecution of a consumer. You can read that opinion as well as I can, and it does not say anything that the city's attorney said. The other thing I wanted to bring up was this. Going back to the issue about whether City of Austin applied to employees, I would point out, because I want this clear, on page 336 it says that the ordinance provisions in that case are very sweeping and denounce a penalty against, quote, any person who shall bury or cause to be buried or in any manner aid or assist in the burial of the dead body of a human being, unquote, contrary to its provisions. And then also in the Robinson case out of Texarkana, there's a quote where they talk about City of Austin. It says, the ordinance in City of Austin could be enforced not only against the owner of the property, but also, and then a little bit later on, the individual actually digging the grave. So what I'm telling the court is based in the opinion and also how other courts have interpreted that. We have that cite, Your Honor, on page 23 of our opening brief, where we cite Robinson and how they construed City of Austin.
Let me make sure I understand what you just said. You said the Dallas court never said that there was nothing in that ordinance that would allow prosecution of a consumer.
That's exactly right, and I believe
okay,
that's
what about the sentence? It says the ordinance imposes no potential liability on a customer of a cab based on a violation of the order, and I'm reading that straight out of the opinion.
And I apologize, Your Honor, but I don't believe that's what it says.
I'm reading it straight out of the opinion, sir. So,
but I will say this. They came up here and said that the ordinance in Denton applies direct. It's the same thing that was over in Dallas. And if you look at the ordinance in this case before it was amended, okay, it says any individual. The definition of person is any individual. They then went back to clarify and take out that it doesn't apply to consumers. Any individual would be a customer. That's plain interpretation, the plain language. I would just say this, two other points is, there is no violation of a disciplinary rule here under 4.04 by admitting that there is some sort of a violation or a confession of a violation. Parties in civil context all the time, defense will concede liability and go try a case on damages. That does not activate some type of disciplinary rule. And then the last thing, too, is, Justice Gabriel, you're exactly right. If you take a look at the prayer in our case that we filed in the trial court, it does not say anything in there about seeking monetary damages. Now, I will say in the request for disclosure, it asks, as the court knows, for if you have monetary damages, and there was a very benign statement in there about that. That's not what we're seeking. We're not trying to use a declaratory judgment act to get money. It's all to challenge the validity of that statute. If there are any other questions?
Any questions?
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you for coming to argue. We appreciate your being here and answering our questions. Your case is submitted.